Welcome back to Good Mood Podcast, where each episode promises to delve into the mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experience. I'm your host, Liz Leach, and I'm pleased to introduce you to this podcast. Jeff was born and bred in Sowerby Bridge, Coldale, West Yorkshire, where he's lived for over 70 years. This series of podcasts captures his story of growing up in Sowerby Bridge and how he entered into the world of performing arts and music. This podcast guarantees to provide an informative insight into life since the 1940s and opens up a perspective of how someone can choose to dedicate their life to creativity. Please subscribe to this podcast to be able to be alerted of new episodes, and also share this with friends and family who you think would be interested in the topic. When you have time, why not visit Jeff's website to find out more information about the work that he's done, which is jeffamos.wordpress.com. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Right, so what I thought we'd do this week is talk about the tour we did in 1989, which was very long. We had a break in the middle of it, but it was quite dynamic really, because there was all sorts of stuff going off. Uh-huh. You know, and I sometimes wonder still whether we had gentlemen from the State Department of the States in it because of what was happening.
Uh-huh. So is that within the band or as part of the tour team?
They came along,
right?
But they weren't Philip Morris people. And they weren't, certainly weren't ours, because it was run by all the Brits, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and they kept going off for meetings. It's probably not, but it just makes us feel
makes
happy.
You wonder.
It does. So, I won't do it absolutely chronological, because typically I still haven't really found all my notes from them. But, so part of the tour was in, like, the eastern countries, if you like. Mm-hmm. And The countries we were visiting were Moscow, in Russia, of course, Hungary, Budapest, East and West Germany, mm-hmm. and Poland, Warsaw. And it was quite fun. I think what I'd like to do is just hit the first one, which was really stunning.
Yeah.
So we went out to this, we were going to this theatre in East Germany. And a lot of the Americans in the band, they don't seem to be able to take things in their stride. It's they were getting really nervous because when you get there and you go through in a bus, if there's a lot of you, there's loads of them, right. Soldiers,
right, yeah, okay.
Running around, and police. And it's to do with everyone's got to have a job. Mm-hmm. And so they've got mirrors going under the bus, or they come on board and they tapping this, even coming in. I think they're looking for porn and stuff like that.
So it was like security check-in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that went on for, I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes.
So what era was that? Was that at a time of high security anywhere?
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah, very much so, right. Yeah, yeah.
So was that like 60s or something?
No, 80s.
80s?
Yeah, yeah. I had been with theatre companies in into East Germany, East Berlin, in the 60s, mm-hmm. and they were, it was all really good. If you were culturally attached to anything, then you could get in, you know, you could get a pass to go through. And what happened was, with the Philip Morris setup, anyone that wasn't directly involved with in this particular instance, say the band or the crew around them, i.e. you know, people from Philip Morris or whoever, they had to be out of East Berlin by midnight,
right,
where we would have special dispensation to leave by 2 o'clock, okay, in the morning, no later than that, because they'd throw a party, you know, and then they wanted to get amongst, you know, all the performers, you know,
yeah.
And so that was quite fun. And when we were coming back out, I'd got quite, I wouldn't say nervous, but it was really strange. There was only two guys there on the way out at 2 o'clock.
Right, doing the check-in. So the two soldiers doing the check-in for when you were leaving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now there would have been at least a dozen.
Right.
Maybe more. And I've been in and out of East Germany, certainly four times I can remember, and it never changed. So I think there's something going off here, you know, I'm saying to myself. I couldn't tell the Americans because they'd panic.
You know. If you picked up that they were already nervous.
And so I grabbed the main tour manager and I told him, because I don't think he'd ever been into East Germany. So I said, oh, what is it? I don't know. You know, so the 10 minutes we were gone, back to the hotel with a bit of a drink, because that next day they were going back to the States and we were going back home. We're having a week off.
Oh, okay.
And when we got there, so we're in the airport. And then something else happened, because it was a time when airports stopped doing all those tannoy announcements that you know, full verbals that used to really screw people up. So it started up, and what they were saying, because they hit it in German first, and I'm looking at our local rep, and he's going, fucking hell, sorry. He said, bloody, you know, he said, it's happening. And I said, what? He said, they're pulling the wall down.
Oh, wow.
So I reckon we were the last Westerners out of East Germany.
Right. And that's, do you think that's why there was such a low level of soldiers on the gate at that point?
I can't think of any other reason.
Yeah. Oh my word. I mean, that is scary, because that means that David Hasselhoff were there singing. It's a good job you got out in time.
I mean, what a powerful thing to be a sort of part of.
Yeah, to have been there at that time.
And every, you know, lots of, obviously German people and what have you, the jaws were just absolutely dropping.
Yeah.
So then they started cheering, and then we had to go get on the flight, you know. So
Fundamental moment.
You know, I feel quite really good about that in an odd way. But it's, when I look back, because Moscow was the last, East Germany was the last before we flew back. And it made sort of sense, because when we were in Warsaw, in Poland, we got told that they were pulling statues of Stalin down.
Okay.
You know, and then when we were in Hungary, they'd voted, the government, that a couple of days before or so, to not be communists anymore. What they were going to have was a new national political party, the only one, of course, that was going to be Hungarian social... not social... can't think of the word now. So when you're not communist, socialist.
Socialist.
Yeah. So it's going to be the Hungarian Socialist Party.
Okay.
So that went down. And what else was there? There was something else as well.
Some really historic moments.
That's right. When we went over, we were taken to lunch by the crews from the theatre where we were doing the gig. And they were saying about it. I was saying, what's ever going to happen? There's one young woman. In fact, they could all speak really good English. But Jeff, we don't want to... For example, people are saying we should be united. We don't want to be part of West Germany. We believe that we have a better lifestyle, better style, because free education, you know, a lot of the arts, you know, which is why we're always bringing, you know, people like you in, especially from Britain. And our main thing, we'd like to earn a bit more. And she couldn't say all about Stasi, and she was you get used to people, and she's looking at me, you know. So I mean, there are other things as well that you know, we're not happy about. But and I can speak for everybody here, is we want to travel.
That's some freedom.
That's it.
Yeah.
Honestly, she said we're good. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go back then? Like, was that the last time?
That's the last time.
Been able to go back and see how different it is as a result of the world coming down.
So, and I always crops up.
Yeah.
You know, tremendous. And then again, the thing that was going down in Poland. And when I was talking to somebody in the theatre there, this has been happening for a while, so we know something's going down.
Yeah.
And I said, well, from what I see on the streets, you can't be doing too bad. I said, there's loads of new Mercedes and cars like that, which I'm just amazed at. Well, he said, you know, we've always been known as the best business people in the whole of the Russian thing, you know.
Right.
So they've never chased us for that. So I thought, oh, well, good on you, you know. Yeah. And that's somewhat proved by when Polish people come and settle over here, you know. Yeah. First thing they do is get a shop going on.
And get a business.
Yeah,
business,
get businesses
business
going.
Business-minded. And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a few times about Peter Morris.
Philip Morris.
Philip Morris.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a little bit, like, how did you get into... So we've heard about where you've been with the touring and what it was like, but how did you get into doing the touring?
It started with a friend of mine, but before that, 15 years before we hooked up, I mean, yes, it's about selling cigarettes and whatever, but it was always classed as arts and cultural tours that we did.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite remember his name, but for the head of it all was the Swiss guy who loved jazz anyway and things.
Uh-huh.
So he started up, and they had, it was in New York, it was a series of workshops for young people, and that's what kick-started it.
Right.
And then they started to put these cultural tours together, not just through the States, and lots of other countries
going
as well. And it was... they would take exhibitions out there, fine art. It wasn't just music,
oh, okay.
Dance, modern, ballet, you know, mm-hmm. So, yeah. And lots of things like that. And so that worked really well. And they'd done... And then when the guy came in who said, look, let's do some real sort of good jazz tours out that used to be done by the State Department in the 50s.
Yeah.
Into all sorts of countries. And we'll set something up. They did it in the first year. They'd been given the name of this company called Sirius Productions, which is still going. And as someone who knew how to look after, you know, and work with people properly. So they were given a chance to do, I think, one gig in London and maybe four in Europe. I think it was a test.
Uh-huh.
And of course they came out with flying colours. I mean, politically, they knew exactly what to do. Took mm-hmm. a suit. We all took suits, mm-hmm. you know, for various reasons at one time. And they did so well, they got the job.
Okay. And were you connected with
No, I was. Basically, because I knew the two main guys at the time.
Yeah.
One of whom was lighting designer for IOU. So we're back, you know, to threads again.
Okay.
And... So they'd done it, I think, maybe a couple of 3 years, and then it was really getting expanded.
Mm-hmm.
And so so they were looking around again for right people. And John thought, well, John coming, well, there's Jeff, he'll come in, and we'll put him with the musicians, you know. But also, he's very good at, you know, seeing how things go and understanding when you're talking to an MD of a company, you know, it's not like being on a straightforward gig, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and I'll say later about higher up than that, so you really had to know what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so that's how it happened, you know.
Yeah. So that was all about the etiquette and how to be with people, not necessarily just how to organise and how to get things
much more
on the road. It was
much
absolutely
more than
much
more.
Even considering how you looked and presenting yourself.
Yeah, at times, you know,
yeah.
And that's because we had dinner with the Sultan of Brunei, for example. This is this is where it could happen.
Yes.
And in Morocco, the royal family. Well, I'll come back to that one in another time because that was quite fun. So there was a lot of that going off. And
you
to be right, you know, because that's what it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah.
And not to offend people, because you can just so easily offend people if you don't...
Oh, yeah.
If you don't understand or you don't have the knowledge.
Yeah. You've got to have a little bit of checking, you know, what's not liked in places, you know. So so that was all right.
So after that first one where you did a couple of, like the tester, you did a couple of gigs and you went abroad a little bit, was it then the second one where you ended up in Moscow and Poland?
It might have been the fourth or fifth. I can't quite remember. Oh, yeah, this went on for 13 years.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's quite some years, really. So
you've trotted the globe over them 13 years.
Yeah. So if we go back... So that particular year, so we've dealt with that one in Hungary. We'd finished the gig. I went back to the hotel, And I used to get a call from a lovely, lovely man, Harry Sweetshead, he's a trumpeter. And I used to have to roll him a couple of joints. That was part of the deal when we got back.
Right.
And he was everyone's, if you looked at him, favourite granddad. Mm-hmm. He was tall. He was dressed very well. He told me that, yes, because he's quite copper-toned, but darker, that there was Indian blood in his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get this phone call. He called me Egg, because I was much bigger than I am now. And he said to me one day, hey, boy, I said, what? He said, you look nice, just like an egg on legs, you know. So that way, so Egg, get your little butt up here. So I'd roll a joint for him. And we were listening to the hotel radio. And we looked at each other. And I said, that's familiar. We do that tune on this tour, don't we? He said, yeah. And he's looking. And he said, I'll tell you what, boy. He said, that's me playing. The state radio had recorded it and put it out on the wireless.
Oh, really? Without knowing, yeah, without you knowing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That actually is us.
Yeah. Just couldn't stop laughing.
Did you ever get hold of the recordings then?
No. Oh, no, no. You just let it go.
Right.
You know. Because there was a time in the Eastern Bloc countries when the bigger bands were going out there, they confiscate the whole of the sound system because you haven't paid tax on it. Wasn't about
just,
that.
And they would just take it.
They're just taking it and then give it to a favoured company. That was how they got decent PA stuff. Oh, they were cute. You know, it was all over the place, you know. And you're not going to win. You know,
yeah,
and
did that ever happen to you then? Did you?
No, not to us. We're jazz, not important in that.
And you don't have like massive PA systems anyway.
Not like that, no. Yeah. So that it was just so exciting. I mean, I used to tell people in the pub about this, you know, and they're going, "You what?" I said, "Really? You know, it's it." So I'm going, yep, that's something to be proud of.
How long were you away for at any given time?
It varied, never less than 4 or 5 weeks.
Right.
I think sometimes way up to 13, 14 weeks.
Okay. And was it always Europe or did you end up going?
Oh no, it was worldwide. When I first started, I didn't go with them. There was two or three other Brits. We stopped and went home at the end of the European leg.
Right.
And then it started to get bigger worldwide, so we got drafted back in to do that as well. Europe was classic, you do one night stands, you know, that's hard, and it's flying everywhere. The budget was just whatever you wanted, you know, so there was no long drives, except for sometimes for 4 years, when we'd a big band, we'd have two buses and two trucks, two Arctics,
right.
And two buses. And they were brand spanking new, like, you know, some bunks on there and a little bit of a lounge at the back. They were made for Tina Turner.
Right.
Yeah, a British company got them made, called Gold One and Gold Two. They were sumptuous, you know. Mm-hmm. So if sometimes the band would go on their own flying, sometimes I'd go with them. And sometimes I'd just stay with the crew and go, it just depended how long and what have you. And then we had these two Arctics as well, you know, so it was all good, it was okay. And that went pretty well. And then of course, when you get out of Europe and, you know, the Eastern Bloc, you might be 3 or 4 days everywhere you go, or 2 days or something. So
as in doing like two nights, two shows?
No, just one.
Uh-huh. It was just a thing. All the travelling.
Yeah, because you might go off and do some workshops or something like that. Mm. You know, and a lot, you know, a good few of the guys in the big band were getting on a bit, you know. So this isn't rock where you're pushed, you know, and you've got to do it like this, you know. So that worked well. And I know, I should stay with this year a bit more of it. Oh, that's right. When we come back, when we were in Moscow, for political reasons, we weren't put into like Holiday Inn or something like that, because this was Perestroika was just coming through. Was it Perestroika? and where they were moving, you know, to have a bit like British companies or American companies coming in, like Ben and Jerry's, McDonald's.
Yeah.
What was it called? There was another name, wasn't it? That'll come back. Did it begin with L? Anyway, it was relaxing, you know, the things there. And so we were going to stay in there, very proud of this Hotel Rosaya. It was a square building. There was over 3,000 rooms in there, all twin, because we'd asked, we'd insisted that we were going to have single rooms because we need space.
Mm-hmm.
But at the start, when they were negotiating, oh, no, we call it antisocial. You cannot have a room on your own. It's enough rock. And anyway, we got past that one all right. And because a few of them had brought their wives, and I was at the corner, each, because it was square, they had what a key lady on each corner of this massive, massive place.
Mm.
And you had to go get your key from there for your room. And they had samovars, so you go and get tea.
Okay.
And things like that. And I was there when, I can't do a Bowery accent, but Molly, bless her, came out, and she said, honey, she said, yes, whoop. What she said, oh, there's cockroaches in my bathroom. And she went, but of course. it was bonkers. It was mid-November when we went back. I couldn't close my window within about 4 inches, and you'd think how cold it is, you know. So there was all that. Yeah, it was funny. There was a 2,500 seat theatre in there, and 1,000 seat
in the hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, my word! It used to three be absolutely
the three
massive.
Banks in there, you know. Oh yeah, yeah. And it was just after the beetroot harvest, so
right.
It was beetroot with everything.
Beetroot for breakfast,
yeah.
Lunch and tea.
But it was okay. I mean, again, you know, we know what we're doing there,
yeah.
As well.
Was that like a brand new hotel then?
No. It had been built, Starling. Starling used to build these massive edifices, you know, like to show how good I am and all that. And it was built like that.
It's like a statement.
It had a serious fire in it. Mm. And, well, somebody must have known how many people died, but they weren't saying. It would have been a lot. So it was sort of rebuilt inside, you know. So just off Red Square.
Right.
It was there. So that was always a bit, ooh. But yeah, and so in the gig in Moscow, I had to go up into the lighting box to work with the two lasses who ran the spots.
Mm-hmm.
Massive, big ones. The women were big as well, actually.
The lasses or the lights.
And the band leader, lovely lad, but it's typical. I'm not having a pop at the Americans, but how little they know about anything outside of their own country, you know? Like in Paris, there's a song called Crème de Menthe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in Paris, and the band leader insisted on saying it's Crème de Menthe. Well, we tried to not do it, but he did it. There was whistles and hoots from the Parisians. That's how we're saying it. Where was it? Boise, Idaho, I think it was where he was from.
Uh-huh.
Oh dear. Anyway, so he's got that, and at the end of the gig, he wished them all a Auf Wiedersehen.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh, God, I looked
at these two women. There was these sharp intakes of breath, sucking there, and looking at me, absolutely furious. And I'm going, no, not American. And we got on really well.
Yeah.
You know, when they were solos, I'd mimicked the instrument and pointed at, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. So they knew where to spot.
Because they come into rehearsals as well, you know.
So
we got really well too.
Yeah, So was the band leader, did the band leader realise
how
much?
No, until we managed to get him on his own. I said, you know, man, that's just, no.
And did he realise, did he do it intentionally thinking it was funny, or did he really genuinely...
He probably thought it was Russian. He did not do it, you know, he just didn't know any better. No, he wouldn't, none of them were like that, you know, I mean, goodness gracious, you know, yeah.
Oh, how embarrassing.
And one more with Moscow, two more with Moscow. About two-thirds of the way through, I'm looking down, and what was she called? Olga, I think, she nudged me and points down right in the front row on the saxophone section. There's the MD, legs up like that. He's tapping away, and there's blood spurting out somewhere here. Yeah. What's gone wrong there? And he's completely oblivious to it. Because all the band were looking that way, and no, you know, and they're reading, so they're not really looking at each, you know, other. Yeah. And what happened was, somebody managed to, one of the crew on the stage side saw it, and managed to get one of the you know, English speaking Russian crew, and went, oh, and there was apparently some medical people there, so they managed to just. While he was waited until that particular tune had finished, so while the band leader was doing a bit of spiel, they ran on and
bandaged him up.
Yeah, so we took him. We flew into Switzerland, Geneva. So we hustled him off straight away to get.
Did you get to the bottom of what had happened?
I may well did, but I can't remember now.
Oh my word!
It's such a long time ago. And I said, I just nuts. And yeah, we, and on the day we were leaving, it was again, the guy from the government there who'd been with us all the time. I don't know if you can remember ever seeing a reassure reel of Brezhnev, you know, big bear of a man. Crinkling eyes, you know, big eyebrows. He'd stayed with us. Right. It wasn't Brezhnev, but he looked just like him. Mm-hmm. And mischievous. And so we're having a reception. The vodka was flowing freely. And after, right, he said, before you get onto your buses, now he said, I've got one last ceremony to enjoy with you. So we're all looking like that, you know. And he said, we are so, so pleased that your government allowed you to come and play for us, because you weren't allowed to bring your wonderful athletes a few years ago. And I'm going, oh, great. He's going to score something here. And the Brits are looking at me and we're all going, you know. And even your beautiful stage crew and your sound people, they've been absolutely wonderful, and he gave us a little bit of applause. He said, so what I want to do is, we're going to give you an Olympic medal, each and every one of you here, and the crews and everything.
Oh, my.
And so we're just trying not to laugh, you know. The guys in the band don't get it. They don't get the irony about it, you know. And if you'd looked at his face... Because one or two other guys asked me after, I said, yeah, come on, this is what this is about, you know. It's great, isn't it? I said, yeah, proper bronze medal. I'm showing it, yeah, I think.
Yeah, that's how it was.
That's how that came
and
about.
And everyone got one.
Oh, everybody.
And it is the official Olympic medal as well.
It's the Olympic competitors, participants medal, I think it's called. Something like that, anyway. But, yeah.
That's one thing, yeah, I bet you never expected to get after going on tour.
No.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, often given things, you know.
But it
was such fun, you know.
And were you all very athletic then?
When we were younger or then? I did a bit of cross country running at school, which I really enjoyed actually. But that was it.
Yeah. You were doing a marathon of a tour, though.
So we were.
So I guess it was justified.
Yeah. there must be other things here.
You were saying as well about being in Morocco, but anyway, yeah,
we'll come back to that one. There's more about this.
Yeah.
I think the sort of final one I mentioned about Moscow is not Moscow actually, but on that tour, we were very late with another Hungarian reception. You know, we were going to miss the flight.
Oh.
Although I had been told by one of the Hungarian people that wouldn't happen. You're our guests. Mm. So they were screaming off. There was a big accident a bit in front of us. So what they did, they switched not only lanes, they switched directions of the motorway. So they were screaming down the outside lane, yeah, going
the wrong way
down. And there was motorbikes way up ahead, you know, waving everyone out of the way. I went, my God. And we got there okay, you know.
Yeah.
But
you must have been regarded as quite high level guests.
Because we visited.
Yeah.
It's like when Margaret and I went to New York after the Twin Towers had come down. Mm. People were just so pleased to see us. Yeah. You know. Yeah. But yeah, you know, so yeah. But they can do it, and they did, you know.
And you got there on time.
Yeah. Oh, one final sting back to Moscow. A lot of the guys, mainly the musos, were going round, and they'd been told that if you go out to that area there, you can buy caviar at a lot cheaper price, you know, large tins of it, you know, things like that. So off they went, bless them. And so when we start going through customs, we had our own customs as well in several countries.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you didn't have to queue with everyone?
No. Because a group of people started to stand in front of us when we were leaving Moscow and budging the guys out of the way. And I said to the guys, don't matter, watch and wait. So when it started to get announced, the officials come down and bounced all them buggers out of the way. This is private. This is for Philip Morris Superbank, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we get there. Anyway, they're going through customs. And could you please open your suitcase, please? And they did. That was bought black market. You can't have that. And took them off it. Of course, it would go back. And it would be sold again. Because it was just, you could see them slightly grinning.
Sold.
Oh, yeah. So they weren't done. You know, they were just... But we'd had an inkling of this. So the crew, we bought some to take back home. But duty free was run by Aer Lingus, of all people.
Oh, what, really?
I've never. So you could go in there and buy it. You know,
Aer Lingus.
Yeah.
I wonder how that came about.
They probably paid a lot for it. I should have thought. So I think that's quite a momentous piece of that tour, really, and I can't think of anything else. But I think that's probably all right. Really, I think, you know, for that bit.
Yeah. What a tour to go on.
Yeah.
And everything that happened whilst you were away as well. And to be able to visit all the countries, some of them specifically very political moments as well.
To
see that and be around
that
is incredible. Yeah.
Were
there any of, like, the musicians that you were with on that tour? What musicians were you with? Who were playing?
Let me see. On the big band, which was, I think, that might have been the second last tour, and I've lost my notes on that one. I wasn't going to fess up, to be honest.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, there was Sweets Edison, trumpet player, a guy called Johnny Coles. Who else was there? There was what we used to call the Wunderkind Australian. Guy there who could play just about any instrument, Philip James Morris, mm-hmm. but nothing to do with Philip Morris. I mean, Philip Morris actually had a couple of islands that they owned off the coast of Australia. They were very big there. I think they ran the Formula One race there as well. So it was, they were massive. Several countries. Egypt was another. We had our own places to go through, so we didn't get held up for hours, you know, yeah. It's all that sort of thing.
So was it with Philip Morris that you toured with some of the well-known jazz music?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not
yeah.
on that well, actual
Ray,
tour.
Ray Brown, the bass player, he was on some of them. Yeah. Ahmad Jamal, a piano player, Hank Jones, a pianist. Dave Holland, bass player.
Oh, yeah.
George Mraz was there. Kurt Lightsey, another pianist. So there was lots,
no.
You know, and it's why I keep kicking myself that I've never really took notes, you know.
Mm.
And I have found, funnily enough, a couple of days ago, some on the web, but it's mainly to do with the Philip Morris Big Band.
Right.
And it was all there. There was a young Ralph Moore, tenor player, who was born in Brixton and then went over to live with his dad over in America. Mm. James Moody, you know, so... It'll come back. We can hit that one a bit later.
Yeah. Do you have any fond memories even of the musicians that you have worked
with? Oh, a lot. Oh, Johnny Griffin, he was another saxophonist there, even shorter than I was. They were all great players, you know.
Mm.
And Johnny started to complain. He said, that's right, that was the last big band tour when we had... did we have one? Ray Charles, BB King on that, and they had their own rooms. So Johnny said, Jeff, why can't I have my own room? I said, I'll get you one. So in the next tour, the next gig, where's mine? We were in Montpellier.
Oh, Montpellier.
So yeah. I deliberately, I'm this rat, I'm going to get you one, right. So off I go and I had a look, and I found the toilet block for artists. So there was two doors for two separates of the guys and one for any female people that were around. So I got in there, I put a little table in for him, local crew, what are you doing? And I told them, oh, we're into this. So so they got me some sign, they made some signs up and put them over the ladies, you know, and what have you. And we put him a little plate full of, you know, some sandwiches and what have you. So in he comes and he's like, okay, yeah, he said, where's my room? So I said, it's here, come round. So I showed it him and he's great. And he goes in and we all run. And I heard this howling, Ed, where are you? I mean, he was grinning from ear to ear, you know. But yeah, there was
lots of fun.
Lots of it. Moody. He piled his perfume on.
Who was it?
James Moody.
Oh, okay.
He piled it on.
Could smell him a mile.
Oh, and then he would come and want to give you a big hug, and I fucking, oh, asthma's just coming straight up,
oh,
you know.
No, no, no.
It's like, oh, Moody, I can't do this. Yeah.
It's going down on the aftershave, Moody.
Yeah.
But you skipped over some names there. You just said that you toured with Ray Charles and B.B. King.
Yeah. They were in this big band,
mm-hmm.
the Philip Morris one. Now, B.B. did it twice. He did one on his own. Oh, with Dinah Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
So that they did that. And then two years in, it was they brought Ray Charles in with B.B. as well.
That must have been amazing.
Oh, it was. Oh, yeah.
It must have been absolutely phenomenal to have them both on stage. Yeah. And that's with a big band.
That's with an 18, 20, 21 piece band.
My word.
You know.
Who was the drummer? Do you remember the drummer's name?
Was it? Oh.
I've put you on the spot now, Jeff.
Yeah, I can't. Harold somebody. Ray was quite a good drummer. So when he was out, he had a way of wanting it played and he could hear it.
Yeah.
But maybe the other drummer just, it wasn't how that person did.
Not the style.
And he was really rude to him, actually. Harold. Come back. But definitely Harold.
Yeah.
It was just awful. Poor man, you know, you just felt. And there was always bits of hierarchy went off with the older black musicians. I went over to New York to get to know B.B. because he was very nervous, apparently, about, you know, coming on. He brought his own MD, was his nephew, Walter, and they used to describe him as a valet, which was his nephew. and he handled the suitcase with the jewels in and carried Lucille's 1, 2, and 3 around with him and whatever. Really, he employed as many of his family as he could. And okay. It was just a lovely man, you know. And we're walking down into New York Town Hall, and he stops before the swing doors, and I think, oh, because he was carrying a guitar. Joe had gone off to get something. So I thought, oh, it was swing doors. So, you know, we'd already got onto sort of abbreviations, so I could either call him Boss or BB, you know. So you trick, this is the difference, you trick carefully when, you know. Really, so I opened it up, and he said, could you just close it, Jeff, a bit, I said, yeah. And I'm saying, well, what's wrong? He said, I'm going to walk down there in front of some of the biggest musical heroes of my life. And because he did once say to me, I don't understand how so many people come to the gigs I'm in. And it's not false modesty, you know, absolutely not. And he said, and then when I get on stage, I'm going to be with my back to them, like rude back. Yeah, I said, well, what else would we do here? You know, I mean, you know, you're a special guest. You know, you're going to be playing up front. I mean, it's not as if it was a quartet, man, or something like that. There's 20 people behind you. And like Ray Brown's, you know, I mean, one of the finest bass players of his generation, you know, and things like that. Yeah, okay, you know, so, but yeah, that's just the man, you know, yeah, beautiful man.
Yeah.
He had a pocket full of, I'm not sure if I've still got any left, of little plastic gold and black BBC, BB King guitars with a pin, things like that. He'd have some, step it up a bit, you know, if he felt they were a bit more, not so much important, but they might be higher up the hierarchy of what you know, the local tour people, you know, and things like that. But yeah.
And so he'd have a gift for people.
Yeah, like, no matter how low it might be, you know, it's a lovely man, yeah.
And what era of his career did you start?
Well, it was when he come back, big time, because he had a big downturn, and it was when Gary, what's he called? A sort of rock blues guitarist.
Gary Moore?
Yeah. Because they were all aware of him, and as far as, you know. And the guy from what am I talking about?
Oh, Edge.
Yeah.
And U2.
Yeah, that's right. And this lead singer.
Bono.
Yeah, they took him out.
Ah, I see.
An international tour.
Yeah, yeah.
As had Gary Moore.
Right.
You know, and of course, there was a generation that hadn't really, because B had gone downhill
and they hadn't
for work. Not for music, so they hadn't picked up on him, you know.
So he got reintroduced to a whole new audience.
And then that was it, you know. Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's phenomenal. It really surprises me that he had this outlook of seeing himself as being amongst the greats. And he was, for one thing,
but he's belonged there.
So tell us about Morocco, then. When did you end up in Morocco?
Can't remember which tour, but we did Casablanca, Rabat, and was it just those two? Yes, I think it was. Casablanca, the royal family were there, most of them, at the older end. Yeah. You know, so that's all, you know, everywhere's got rifles and guns and stuff, because there was this terrorism problem here and there, you know. And so, yeah. And then we went down to Rabat, and that was given, quote unquote, by the younger end of the family, the under 30s. So that was there. And again.
So it was still the royal family?
Oh, still the royal family, but the younger generation. Kids, yeah. And so I think it wasn't done to be seen that mum and dad could go with the younger end somewhere, you know. So I had to go on. For a spot there, because they got when both of us, actually, one of the other crew, to go on the other one. So at halfway through, it was really hot in there. And so I'm working away, and I found this, like a piece of wood, banging me on my shoulder, you know, like three or four times. And I thought, I'm about to do a coup here, so it stopped for a bit. And then it started again, and I turned round to say, there's a rifle. It's the gun barrel, and he's got it like that. It's like,
oh my word.
And then he smiled and pointed to my bottle of water.
What did he want your bottle of water? What,
to drink, because we hadn't got any.
Oh no. I'd have been absolutely petrified. You must have been petrified.
Well, the first, like that, you're going, you know.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Absolutely. Oh dear.
Barber, yeah.
That is barber.
Yeah.
So is that when you would, was it for the older generation of the royal family, or the younger generation where you worked together?
Because you. Oh no, that was.
Is that somewhere else?
Yeah, that's. Oh, bloody hell, now I'm forgetting this now. That little, it's just above Singapore, Belize. Mentioned it earlier on. Bahrain. We'll have to come back to that. Sultan of Brunei.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
We don't need to come back to it. We've got it.
We've got it now. So, yeah. I mean, we sat well down the table, but, you know, that's the
music. What did you have then? What was the food?
I can't really remember. It was good, you know, but he's a very autocratic man. You could sense that the staff around him were really on their toes. Mm. You know, the body language was, you know. But we'd had a little bit of a heads up. You know, from,
so you were ready for it.
You know, from some of the Philip Morris people, mm-hmm. to say, no jokes, he's no sense of humour, you're not allowed to speak to him, we're invited, which is great, you know, but we think that was an afterthought, you know, somebody needed to be with the band, you know, to keep them calm. So, yeah, so it was all right, you know. But,
so you got the heads up, you know how That must have been... Because, like, musicians love to have fun, generally.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So that must have been really, like...
Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah. Oh, I fit the bill with them. Again, with the big band, I started to have a word of the day.
Mm.
You know, because there was this American, English going off on the... Usually on the flights, you know, and things like that. And so I said, right, this is it. And so I said, your word for today is whimsical. And I want three examples of how you could use that word. You what? Whimsical. No diary or anything like that. You're not looking
You're not looking this up.
And it was quite good, you know. And I can't remember that a lot of the words now, but some insisted on the right spelling. So they'd give the right spelling. I said, that's rubbish. That's bloody American. It kept them happy.
It's not a Z, it's an S.
Yeah, no. While we're on about them, I'll just give one more and I'll save some for later.
Okay.
We were in Italy, touring Torino, going to fly back to the States. And we're finishing a tour off there this time. And so what happened, it was the first time when planes were being threatened to be bombed, you know, and things like that, when luggage was starting to be, you had to take your own luggage through.
Mm.
We managed to get away with it. That was the last time when that happened. A couple of days before that, we had this big gig there, and everybody wanted to get in, and I put myself by the stage door, and there was a back door as well, just, you know, because there was an Italian crew there, but they were unsure. They didn't have any English, the people who put there. So I get a call. Jeff, can you come out? We've got a problem here. I said, okay. So I went there. And there's this black guy trying to get in. I mean, not in a bad way, you know. And he said, oh, you're English. I said, yeah. He said, I want to come in and see Ray, a friend of mine, you know, Ray Charles was there. So I said, I'm sorry, if there's no pass given out, we really can't do it. He said, but I really just want to see him, you know. And I wasn't rude, because I just thought, well, you know, you're not going there. He wasn't much taller than me, really trim. And he said, yeah, I should, okay. And off he went. And when the door got closed, and when they turned round, most of the band were either horrified or killing themselves laughing at me. I said, what's wrong now? How polite was that? Yeah. Do you know who he was? I said, no. He said, that was Marvellous Marvin Hagner, the world bloody boxing champion.
Oh, no.
I said, I don't care.
He's not a musician. It's okay.
Jesus.
A boxing champion.
Oh, really? Well. Look him up. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. But from, like, the stature that you just described to me, that doesn't sound like the stature of a boxing.
Well, he was a lightweight. He wasn't a heavyweight.
It's a good job, isn't it?
Fucking hell. Good reception after. Somebody, big Jeff Clayton, nudged me and said, you're in for it now, yeah.
When Ren finds out.
I said, really? And he was a big talk. I said, I'm going to stand near you with this blood. He said, no, you're not. I'm off. And he come up. And I thought, well, we both opened our mouths together. And he said, I am really sorry. I would never allow that to happen, you know, if I had a reception somewhere. I should have gone through. I said, well, I'm sorry. I don't watch boxing. He says, well, I'm not sure I can forgive you that, Egg. Somebody told him, you know. Yeah, oh, Egg, yeah, because she's just down there. And, so...
You're not coming in, right. Even if you are famous.
Oh dear.
Well, I'm going to mention some, because you mentioned someone, you mentioned Shireen just then. Last time we were talking about this tower, you mentioned someone called Bobby Hutcherson.
Oh, Butch Hutchinson, yeah.
Tell us a bit about him.
He's another, well, was he's dead now. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things with Bobby. One is that we were in the, I guess, the dead middle of the Pacific, on a little island called Guam, G-U-A-M, which it's basically, it's a base for the American Air Force and Navy. Mm-hmm. And we went out, early hours, we went out sea fishing, because he has a boat at home, or had, and he used to go fishing. And the locals that took us out there, there's only three or four of us went, we're going to be fishing for wahoo. And I looked, he said, I know, but it's wahoo. And showed me a photograph of it. I said, oh, it looks like what we have a fish called a pike, but it's got very much like mackerel colouring, you know. Mm. And he said, well, are they big? He said, well, they can go, you know, something like, 4 or 5 feet, maybe more. And he said, they're plump, the meat's really good. So I didn't bother, but Bobby got going and we caught about four. So they were going to go back to the hotel and the chef was going to cook, you know, a buffet with all the meat from it, which is good. And before I go on to the one, I think I know what you're thinking about now. There was another boat alongside with obviously tourists that they were partners, these two fishermen. So we went back and he said, do you guys like sushi? I said, oh yeah. He said, well, I've just grind, you know, some spices up, and then, you know, I'll knock it on the head and whatever. He said, but if you're a bit squeamish, he says, well, not particularly, I'm quite happy with sushi. Well, and, you know, our boat was there, 8 foot away, that side of the pontoon, that boat was there. And I watched, and they were slicing it up while the fish was still alive.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he looked at me, he said, yeah, it's cultural, Jeff. I said, yeah.
Oh, no.
I understand that, you know.
Oh, I'd have felt sick, I think.
Yeah.
I feel a bit sick.
I'm glad he warned me. The green horseradish that's Japanese.
Wasabi.
Wasabi. So he was making up some dips of wasabi, some other sort of little things, that sweet and sour little dipping sauces. That was great, you know. So that was all right, yeah. But going back to Europe again, I'd driven down with the guys, and we'd got to Turin, and we were in there, and we'd loaded in, got everything set up. And I thought, yeah, let's. It's great what you can find backstage of theatres, you know, proper theatres. And it's just reminding me about another one in that space as well. So I'm looking at the sound crew, they're looking at me, they're grinning. I said, Chella, go on. There was this child xylophone about this big. Not a 6, 7, 8 foot.
You know? 2 foot long. Yeah. That's all you've got for tonight.
He was 6 foot. You'd have to really bend down to play. So we mic'd it up. We sound checked it. And so then we just threw cover over it for a bit. I said, everything all right, guy? Yeah, yeah. Bobby, I need a word with you. What's that? I said, when we got the back line company to bring, you know, some of the stuff here for us, we've opened up the vibes and it's broken. And he went, oh, my God. But I said, we've got a replacement for you. And he's, good on you, Jeff. You know, you're not the egg today. You haven't been a Jeff today. I said, okay, I just could get my mallet. So he walked him back. So the crew sort of stood behind me and having a chat, so it wasn't obvious that we were hiding it. And somebody nudged me back on my legs and do it. So I whipped the cloth off and we parted. Well, he finished himself laughing. Here, get it out. And he said, you've got mics on it as well, haven't you? Yeah, because it come out the full PA. Bloody hell. He said, bang that. And he went down in the audience level to have a listen to it. We also found a shepherd's crook, you know, what they would use in pantomimes, yeah, and yeah, things, yeah, like that.
Oh, in the prop department.
Oh, yeah, it was a bit of prop, obviously. But now we were having some problems with, Johnny Griffin. Because they've got three or four big soloists, their solo bits were really truncated, you know. And it was a, you know, they stopped doing it because of that. We brought three or four bands in as opposed to the big band.
Right.
And he started overrunning by quite a bit.
On his solo?
When a solo bit with his own little band within the big band, you know. So,
I see.
Well, I'm going to play another, you know. So off he'd go, his saxophone blowing away. And he'd look at me, grinning. You know, I'll get you somehow. So when we got into this particular Italian gig, and he was overrunning by a quarter of an hour, I got that shepherd's crook and crept out and just put it round his neck and just
checked.
I mean, I could have been in real shit there, to be honest, but it was
hilarious.
Fine. Yeah. He was killing himself laughing, you know. He went back on and he explained.
Yeah. This is what just happened. You mentioned a couple of trumpeters as well, and I don't think you mentioned them this time. Donald Byrd and Harry Sweets Edison.
Oh, yeah, well, I've mentioned two Sweets.
Did you mention? Oh, of course, you said Sweets.
But Donald Byrd was a darling of the acid jazz world as well.
Right.
I mean, you know, in this country.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a great deal to do with him for one other reason. It was fine to talk to and everything, you know, but Sweets was a lovely man. Yeah. And he had a very, very relaxed way of playing. He played a lot with Count Basie's orchestra.
Oh, incredible.
And amongst other things. He was a, you know, someone who, it was almost like if it was a big band, Basie's big band, it was like a permanent berth, you know, so, yeah.
Some phenomenal musicians, because you also mentioned piano players Hank Jones, Kurt Lightsey. Hamid Jamal.
Brilliant. And I remember in Munich in the opera house. No, it wouldn't have been the opera house, it'd been the posh One of the posh orchestra houses. So with a bit of downtime, the PA hadn't been set up properly, and George, the PA guy, was doing his note. So there was PAs, pianos everywhere, of course. So we went in off the main stage, and I'd walked in with Hank and Dave, Dave Holland, because I used to look after his bass a bit, because that was quite a special thing. I'm trusted to carry it around and stuff like that. And so so then George Maras came in, Kurt Lightsey, so with Hank Jones on one piano, all full concert grounds, Kurt Lightsey on the other one. So I pushed them around, so they were facing each other, got the lids up. And George Maras was playing with Kurt Lightsey, and Dave Holland was playing with Hank Jones. Right. I had an hour. I could have wept, which
is like an absolute
sheer joy, you know, playing what they want to play and everything like that. Yeah. Oh,
that sounds so good.
Yeah. Oh yes, I could feel myself welling up with that. It was just pure unadulterated music.
Yeah.
Off they went. And of course they're still trying things. I mean, that's the nature of of jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Try this then.
Just stretching the boundaries,
yeah.
And just throwing things
even then
in,
do you know?
Yeah. It must have been amazing. And I can imagine some of the venues that, because of the size of the band and the makeup of the band, the quality of the musicians, the venues you must have scored for playing in must have been fabulous.
Oh.
Acoustically.
Oh yeah, because they were all good. Yeah. And there wasn't a duff one at all, really. You know, that was quite handy. Yeah, we did end up in Manila at a venue that George, the guy who headed, he was an electric whiz as well, electronic whiz, about fat and great ears. And he said, "Jeffs, what?" He said, "Come here, watch this." And he plugged, technically, he plugged this into something. Needles were flying all off. He said, "The whole venue is live." He said, electricity.
Oh.
And it was you've got to be careful what you touch. So I stopped anyone plugging in.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was that bad. And the joy of it was owned by the Manila power company, the electric power company. You know?
They'd not earth their own building.
Yeah. Completely unearthed.
Ground control.
All in a day.
Oh, Jeff.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So wonderful to hear, like, where you've been, who you've been alongside,
yeah.
And it's incredible.
Yeah. There's others coming back, maybe for another time when we're in Australia. I did a bungee jump there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, two reasons. One, it was there, and this was on the Gold Coast. Two, I can't swim, so I couldn't do anything else. So I thought, well,
Do a bungee.
First and last time.
Oh, yeah. I do not get that. I just thought, why? Why would you even want to throw yourself off something?
Yeah. Good, innit?
How did it feel when you did a bungee? I mean, I've never asked somebody this, actually, but what was it like?
Well, it's a mixture. A, you've got to trust somebody. This wasn't a bridge or anything. It was a telescopic, you know, crane.
Okay.
You know,
what were you over then? Were you over water?
Not this, but it was alongside the beach.
Right.
So all the other guys who could swim, and that was everybody except me, were paragliding or doing what they were doing or
over
what have you.
Yeah,
like Billy No Mates, you know.
You were like, watch me.
So it sounds like we're not saving it for later now. So I had a look in the distance and I could see the telescopic tray up there. When I got a little closer, there's people jumping off it. And so I knew what it was. Mm-hmm. So I wandered down to have a look. And being Australians, the crew were looking me up and down. I mean, at 5'4", I was nearly 17 stones then.
Right.
I was huge, crazy, but that's a different story. And he said, "Want to go, Blue?" You know, and of course, if you hesitate, you're lost, don't you?
Yeah.
So I said, "Yeah, go on." So he said to his mate, "Better gym up, mate, we've got a big in here." And you don't think about jumping because you won't do it.
Oh.
You know, so he got my name and all that, you know. So I told him, "What are you doing?" I went out with a band and the guys in the band call me Egg. Right, yeah. So that was it. So he shouts up, "Egg, yep, you okay?" He said, "Yep, on you go." And I jumped. And there's this rush of all sorts of feelings, you know, inside, you know. I wanted to giggle. I can't explain some of it, you know. And when I got down, we were there. See, okay, I'm absolutely fine. None of the guys saw me do it.
Didn't they? Oh, what a shame.
I was pissed off about that.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. So you haven't got anyone that can say, "Saw you do that."
No.
"Saw you do that, Egg."
Yeah, no. Really.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Your stories of your tours. I'm sure there's going to be more to share as well.
There's lots more.
Yeah.
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 As I'm talking about them, they're coming to fruition, really.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You'll get more memories coming through as well.
Yeah.
Well, I reckon that's a good place to stop so that we can have some biscuits.
Okay. My biscuits.
Your biscuits, Jeff.
Yeah, ginger snaps, which I've baked. Yes. Mm,
the best.
Rightio.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Good Mood Podcast, a series that gathers together a rich mosaic of Jeff Amos's life experiences in performing arts and music. Hosted by myself, Liz Leach. We look forward to you joining our next episode. In the meantime, please subscribe to the series, recommend to friends and family who you think would be interested in this topic, and remember to visit Jeff's website, jeffamos.wordpress.com. We look forward to you joining us at the next episode.